Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. Up a little later than usual. I had a few scheduling issues yesterday, but we are here on the weekend. And maybe that works out in our favor, Les, here early on this Saturday morning, since there was some interesting news coming out of last night's SmackDown. Lot to cover with respect to another week of Triple H, Paul Levesque being in charge of creative in WWE. So we'll talk about some of those things that we've noticed over the past couple of shows that have changed. We'll take a quick look at some stuff with AEW and also go back in the day, I think, for a fun retrospective of a historic show that is celebrating an anniversary this weekend. But we'll start with what we saw closing the show on SmackDown last night, the return of Karrion Kross, who had a very, shall we say, star-crossed debut on the main roster the first time around. But he's back. He's got hair. He's also got Scarlett, which is a big improvement. And he also attacked Drew McIntyre at the end of SmackDown last night. But not only did he attack Drew, apparently putting Roman Reigns on notice by setting an hourglass down, pointing at Roman as if to indicate his time was running out as well, Les.
Well, even if they just booked Scarlett, I'd have been happy. No, seriously. I thought the guy, I like his look. I think he's got talent. She certainly doesn't hurt the package. His promos, I thought, were strong. And I just, on NXT, it was they like had him as Superman, which doesn't fly. I mean, he's a, well, I say normal by wrestling standard size man. So I hope they're using him. And obviously the way he was used on the main roster the last time around was a god awful. So yeah, let's hope and I'm sure if they brought him back, I'm sure he got some satisfaction out of saying, well, if you're going to do this, I'd rather not, or if you're going to do that, let's skip it. So I would say whatever happens is going to be positive going forward from this point. But I think he adds some good flavor to the mix, don't you?
I do. It's a nice change. I had expressed some concern earlier in the week to some friends I was speaking to on social media with respect to the fact that we had seen an article saying that apparently he had been considered for a return. And just because of the way that gimmick worked out for him with the helmet, that would still be a little too fresh in the minds of the audience and they would never let him live it down coming back so quickly. But last night was a very positive start. And I guess one of the ways you try and rub some of that stain off of somebody is immediately putting them at or near the top. So Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns puts him in pretty heady company right from the jump.
Yeah, it does. And he's fresh, like you mentioned. And I think that's as positive a reason to put him up there with Drew and Roman as anything, because he's an unknown factor at that level. And I think it'll end up, I don't know. I think Drew should get the shot at Roman first, but it doesn't, there's something there too. He and McIntyre can have a feud that carries on for a while until it comes down to, both these guys are obviously solid contenders. We got to have up, and so then have something, maybe the stipulation being whoever comes out on top here. Or do a three, split the first two matches and the rubber matches, the winner gets, the title shot or something. But yeah, it adds a fresh face, which has been needed. I mentioned last week to my friend Jim, he's about the Usos he said, thank God I'm going to see him again for the 10,000th time. And I think that's been, you can give me your feedback on that too, but I think with SmackDown and with Raw both in the last couple months, it's basically the same guys and without really a stipulation other than something that's weak that throws them back in there together. And I don't think it's a positive fit, do you?
Well, that's long been a problem with the previous regime, shall we say, in terms of their booking and the lack of fresh faces and the way that fresh faces on the rare occasions that they do show up quickly become just another one of the pack. And so starting Karrion Kross here upon his return is a great start, as we mentioned. But I'm looking at this and I don't want to get too far ahead of us, but, that's kind of what we do, right? The podcast is a speculation station. So we've got this show in the UK, Clash at the Castle, on September 3rd, which doesn't seem to leave a whole lot of time between you know, for whatever's going to happen here between Cross and McIntyre. So I'm wondering, especially since he's a new face, and I don't know that I would want to beat him, and I'm not sure Triple H brought him in here to beat him within the next 3 weeks. Maybe we build to a match with McIntyre for a couple of weeks, do it on television, have some sort of indecisive double disqualification, wild brawl, pull everyone in the building comes out to pull him apart, finish, and you do whatever you're doing at the pay-per-view with McIntyre and Roman, and Cross attacks the winner.
Yeah, that's good. I like it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, that's the thing I think has been the problem, too. You know, when the old story, well, Vince showed up at 6 p.m., and started changing everything on the show. And so we had to, on the fly and blah, 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 you know, to come up with good storylines and good finishes. I don't care if you're writing a movie, a TV dramatic series, or a damn wrestling match. You need to sit down and brainstorm and take some time. And they just haven't been doing that. So that's, you know, I think it looks like this stuff is going to be positive. And in that same respect, I'd mentioned it to you before we started recording. The beautiful way on Monday night that Becky became a babyface without any physical stress or strain, and that's obviously was Triple H's handiwork. But that's where she belongs. The whole heel thing I thought was ill-conceived, and it never worked for me. But I think, like I say, the simplicity, you know, let's start back at the pay-per-view. She lost a match, but, in, you know, with a little hesitation, she was wanted to hug Bianca and, you know, and congratulate her. And then when Bayley and her crew came out, she was there to back Bianca, but nothing happened. So it moved on. And then the first thing on Monday night, she comes out in the black costume. Thank God she's no longer using her husband's tailor. and it'd be good if he wasn't. But anyway, you know, she came out just the black outfit, nothing fancy, with a humble speech pattern. And, you know, said, hey, I'm thinking this is not necessary, all this stuff. You know, and so it works out. And the fans bought it. And I'm all for that, too, because I think she was far more valuable to the company as the man or as a babyface, don't you?
I do, and I obviously Triple H, Paul Levesque, felt the same way. Perhaps he was hoping to have her around for a lot longer than as it turned out here, but in the long run, it could turn out to be a good thing for them, because with one less person, and I understand when you're bringing in the three ladies who we're going to get to in just a second, Bayley and her crew, then you're imbalanced in terms of heels and baby faces. So there was another reason why it makes sense for Becky to turn. But maybe they've unintentionally run into something good, assuming, of course, Becky is able to be return herself to 100% here in the next few weeks or months, where now they've gotten a little bit of heat as having some responsibility for Becky Lynch being off the show, talking about Bayley and her crew. And then when Becky returns, now, between Bayley, who had been away for a while, and Becky, who will have been away for a little bit, you've got two veterans who actually return and freshen up the roster and the show a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. It's. Did you happen to notice, I was thinking of you, too, with, I had mentioned to you about Bianca, that her spinning the hair and smiling and dancing, even when her whole family had been killed in a car wreck, and I mean, that's not the truth for those listening. I'm just, you know, but regardless, from the sublime to the ridiculous, she never changes. Did you notice that this week?
Did you notice a change, I guess, is the question I'm asking, because when you bring that up, I couldn't help but think of the start of The Rock's career as Rocky Maivia, where he was the happy, smiling baby face. The people were turning on him, but it was Vince who remained in his ear about having the smile on your face at all times, no matter what. And it drove Dwayne sick.
Yes. Why Vince would want his people. I know the women were given that pitch, too, a while back, a number of years ago. You know, no matter how bad you've been beaten up, smile on your way to the dressing room. What? Let's just, I'm not. If you're just having a meet and greet for the fans, let's let them all walk through the audience and shake hands, pose for pictures on your smartphone. Forget the wrestling. I mean, if you know, if that's all it's about. But yeah, there's going to be obviously a change, and it's going to be a little, you can see it already coming, and it's more subtle now than I'm sure it will be on down the road. But it certainly should create some excitement in viewers, don't you think?
I think so. And the number maybe for this week's Raw speaks to that, although there were a couple of other circumstances about that, which we'll get to in a minute or two. I want to circle back around to Bayley, though, since obviously she's made her return in the last week or so and brought some friends with her. Io Shirai, now known as Io Sky, and returning Dakota Kai, who unfortunately had been let go a while back in one of those many roster purges that has taken place over the last 12 to 18 months. Bayley was on one of WWE's online shows this week speaking about this, said the idea of returning with the group was something she had thought about for quite some time, and interestingly enough, said she had spoken to Paul Levesque about it a while back, long before she was ready to return. And part of her motivation for that, she said, was that if she was going to push hard for an opportunity like leading a group, she thought it would be best to do it with women that hadn't been on the main roster before, people she thought it could work with, but also folks who would benefit from that kind of spotlight. So even Bayley, long before she came back, was on the hunt for what, Les? Fresh faces.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Shirai, she's one of the things that with the Japanese girls that pokes me in the wrong place is they dramatically oversell things, like or it's not, I won't say necessarily it's selling if they've been hit or kicked or bumped, but it's like they can get a little shot in on somebody and then they want to turn around and wave to the people and it's overdone. And with Dakota Kai, we've had this conversation. I've had this conversation with my friend Jim. I never saw why she got the big push in NXT. One of the things was she was so, and when I don't mean to lean on the thing about size, but she was just a very slim lady. I didn't see any muscle. So I just, I wanted to see, like, did you walk past the weight room? Never mind, did you actually go in? But, we'll see. I was never high on her, but that doesn't mean she won't be great and draw money and end up being good just because I didn't see it. Our business that we've talked about on here numerous times is subjective. You see one thing and one person and I see something different. And it's fresh. That's the main thing I think comes back again. I'll tell you something else that I'm happy to see. Ciampa not being used to slip over idiots.
His journey has been really interesting in that, remember when he and Johnny Gargano first showed up in NXT, it was guys from the so-called, at least in WWE land, independent circuit who had a little bit of a name that were there to make sure other guys that they were pushing would be spotlighted in good matches. And here we are all these years later where Ciampa became such an important part of NXT and is now getting an opportunity with Paul Levesque, it appears at least, in charge of creative in WWE. Now we see on basically not quite the first night of him putting the show together, but a couple of weeks ago that was kind of under duress, and I would imagine since Vince resigned on a Friday and the show was on Monday that most of, if not all, of that show had already been done, and so they just went ahead with what they had. So this is really one of the first, if not the first, episodes of Raw that was probably way more Paul Levesque than anybody else. And it was interesting to see Ciampa get not one, but two wins immediately. So it speaks to the impression that he made on Paul Levesque in NXT.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the bottom line for me, of course, is I think we're going to see actually more wrestling on a wrestling show.
What?
There's a clever move. And speaking of the word wrestling, I understand, too, that if you call someone a wrestler or say you're going to wrestle, it's okay. You won't get fired.
Wrestlers and wrestling no longer dirty words in the land of sports entertainment, apparently.
Yes. Thank God. I always thought that was, but we've talked, you and I have talked about this too over the years that we've been doing this. If you work in that company, you speak that language. But nobody outside of that company speaks the same language, right? I mean, fans don't say, hey, I'm going to go see sports entertainment. It's always been wrestling. I hear, I cringe sometimes on AEW when I hear a guy say, I want to fight this guy. And I thought, get over it. this is not WWE. You don't have to say that anymore. You know, I mean, it's like, how about saying, I want to wrestle this guy. I mean, come on. But yeah, so in the company now, you can say wrestling and you can be a wrestler. I don't know how that'll play out for the big angle in AEW.
Or whether or not they're going to have to change things now that the sports, the last sports entertainers on earth, I guess.
And one of the weakest angles I've seen in my life, or and I shouldn't say in my life, in the current product of anybody's current product, is sports entertainers versus wrestlers.
Oh, that's a fact. We're going to get to the sports entertainer in charge in a few minutes, but there are a couple of more items on our WWE list I want to check off, Les, with respect to this past week's Raw. Obviously, that show's a week old now. It's not a show breakdown, but it was a unique situation in that it was the first show after SummerSlam, and to hopefully capitalize on a bigger audience at the start, WWE went to USA, and USA agreed to go commercial-free for the first hour. And that hour was the biggest audience they've had in quite some time, so obviously it worked. Did a very good rating for the show by today's standards overall. And that commercial-free first hour also saw WWE utilize different ways to fill the time that normally would have been commercial breaks. And I know you and I are in agreement that we both really hope it's not a one-time thing. Can you talk about not only the use of video packages this week on Raw that we didn't normally get during the standard three-hour fare in years past, but other things you might have noticed that felt different about this television program?
The flow. And I thought that, well, you know, and something that my friend Jim pointed out to me, well, he points out every week, if it's, it drives him nuts, is to have, especially on WWE shows, have this the first wrestler come out, introduce in the ring, and then go to commercial. So that wrestler has to do what for the next 3 or 4 minutes? Blow his nose, pick his, you know, wave at the people, or just stand there like a robot, or what? And then come back to get the match started, and then go to commercial again. And it just, it's crazy. And I think we just saw a better flow. And it's not, I know it's not something that I don't think a lot of people call attention to, but I am not a huge fan of the picture-in-picture commercial thing. But I realize what they're trying to do, because no longer we just have a 2-minute commercial break. Now sometimes they seem like a lifetime commercial break, and so they're trying to keep the action flowing and keep the people in the match. But again, for me, when I don't care what company it is, but when you get that picture-in-picture, the commercial is always the larger of the two pictures, and you cannot help but turn and watch it some. Are you the same way?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because it's just the size of the screen. If it's not a completely 50-50 split screen, which would make it difficult to pay attention to either, then your eyes are naturally drawn to the larger box.
And it's always the commercial, right? It's never the wrestling.
That's correct.
And to me, I don't know. To me, I think here's where whoever was, you know, on the offensive end when we went to this picture-in-picture, let them grab a hold. Yes, hold. It's arm bars, leg locks, waist, head, headlock, whatever. And work it and build into where they're going and coming out of that commercial. Because, you know, the referee's got his earpiece in and he's being told, okay, we're going to commercial. All right, we're coming, you know, we're back in 10 seconds or back in whatever they're giving him. And so they could, you know, they could make their switches, but I'm just thinking, and that gives them, then they don't have to do a spot and both of them lay around and come back and do a spot and both of them lay around. You can get that breather in that commercial hole and come back and set fire to yourself. Not literally, action wise, coming out of the commercial. How do you think that would work?
I like it a lot, but I want you to take a moment or two to talk about something we've spent a lot of time over the years on this show talking about. But I want to do it for the benefit of some of our newer listeners, since most of the shows now at F4WOnline.com are no longer behind the paywall. And we've picked up some folks. Grateful for that, too, thanks to Spotify and Apple. The use of video packages, something you were one of the pioneers of during the days of the territory and your time in some production positions in wrestling back in the day. And I particularly am thinking about the package that highlighted the importance of the United States Heavyweight Championship, a storied title that goes back into the days of Jim Crockett Promotions. And they did such a wonderful job with that package, making it seem and feel important, and why we were having these matches that we had this week on Raw. But just the ability to utilize those kinds of video packages to explain to people things that unfortunately get lost in the sauce too much on modern wrestling television today.
Wow, you should have never brought that up to me. Have you got an hour? And for those that don't know or don't follow me or haven't followed me up until you start listening to us here, I started doing what we're calling video packages in 1975 here in Knoxville at WBIR Channel 10, when we went on the air at Channel 10 in 1975. One of those video packages we call Personality Profile. And so many of my peers in 1974, when I first started putting this whole thing together, let me back up just a little bit more. Ron Fuller bought John Kazana out, the promotion, in 1974. And he took over in late October, early November 74, and I first started producing the television in November of 74. But at the when Ron called me and brought me on board, he said, "I'm not a television guy. I want you to build me a TV show." And he gave me carte blanche. So one of the things that we were including was this personality profile with a pre-tape, sit down, 5 minutes, talking about the wrestler's background, schools, particular hobbies, anything of interest about that wrestler, trying to get them over to the fans, a la the way NASCAR sells the driver usually you like is the one that's driving the car that you own, and that sort of thing. So anyway, so yes, we've been using it since 75, and back then I was told, "You can't do that." And I said, "Why?" And well, it's because you're losing your momentum, you're building heat. Realize back then we used TV to bring people to the buildings. We didn't try to sell you a TV package and put a championship match on TV every week or every 5 minutes. And so anyway, they're saying you're losing your momentum in that 5 minutes. You got to build it all over again. Can you do that? Well, we didn't have to do it. Anyway, I won't go into the whole historical thing of why I decided that it would work, but it did. And so now a low-key sit-down interviews or video packages are pretty much commonplace in the industry. And they do get people over, and they tell a story. And I think, you know, like you, when I was watching that U.S. title video, I thought, damn, that's good. And I've said for years, as you know, Vic, instead of 3 hours of Gnana, right, how about adding three or four of these 5 minute video, you know, like Personality Profile, and let us see the other side of, you know, well, you mentioned Karrion Kross and Scarlett. What do they dress like this on the street? Do they do this? You know, everybody's smart. Well, let's act like it then, you know, and we know that the heels don't go home and slap their wives and kids around and kick the dog. So tell me why I want to watch, make me want to watch this person more. Give me some background on them. So yes, I'm high on video packages, and I've thought something like that would work, opposed to just having meaningless matches throughout the show. And it will work on AEW, work on Impact, work on any damn show. But I was going to say too, I have started watching on A&E on Sundays, taping the the WWE biographies that A&E is running on, and the rivalries, which are also damn entertaining and informative. And I thought, these are the things, well, not, you can't do a whole hour, obviously, on a TV, on a wrestling show, but that type of thing in a small package, a 3 or 4 or 5 minute piece, I think is far more beneficial than just a match that has no meaning and nobody really cares about. So yes, I'm all for video packages.
We are getting ready to transition to talking a little bit about what we saw on AEW Dynamite this week and what's happening this weekend as we record this early on a Saturday morning. But before we do that, Les, I think maybe one of the things we have not stressed enough in talking about not only your vast experience, but the opportunities that promotions, wrestlers, wrestling schools have in working with you and bringing you in for weekend training camps? You know, we spent a lot of time, obviously, and understandably, talking about the things you can do for any wrestler who happens to be in that weekend training camp. But there's also the opportunity and possibility to talk to whoever's making the matches and putting things together for if they're running a promotion regularly in their local area, about how to structure programs and do booking and even things with television. And you also are available to work with their announcers if they have a streaming service, and things of that nature also come as part of those weekend training camps. Am I right?
Yeah, I sure am. Yeah, I you know, if someone were to hire me for a one-day seminar or you know, preferably a weekend camp, I'm available for that day. So sure, if you want to sit down and talk about your booking philosophy and see what I think about how your TV show is put together, anything along those lines, you know, or evaluate talent, I'm at your disposal. And of course, you know, in the weekend camps, we cover everything: tag matches, singles matches, psychology, how to build a show, how to build a match, you know, timing, pacing, weight training, nutrition, dieting, virtually anything concerning professional wrestling, we will cover in those 2 days. So yes, feel free to drop me a line, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. I'll be more than happy to send you out that information. And hopefully we can hook up. And I feel, you know, if I come in and work with your people, and of course, promoters, if you open the doors and make it open to any independent wrestler that you want, you know, I mean, I'm not averse to you making, you know, making money off of this as well. And you may see some new talent that you hadn't seen previously. But the point is, I think we can help improve the talent that you're using all the time, which makes you, it gives you a better show and hopefully draws you more people.
Taking a look now at what's been happening over the last week or so in AEW. Last night on Rampage, we saw Mance Warner get himself a shot at the AEW interim champion Jon Moxley and the in-ring debut of new AEW coach Madison Rain. Also got the third Battle of the Belt special on TNT, which is happening as we record this on Saturday morning, later tonight. Wardlow defending the TNT title against Jay Lethal, AEW Women's Champ Thunder Rosa against Jamie Hayter with her championship on the line, and Claudio Castagnoli makes his first Ring of Honor world title defense against Kanesuke Takeshita. Should be a good show. Not a ton of drama, I would think, though.
No, I don't see it. Well, I was just going to say we won't ruin it for anybody. I saw the results this morning. Mm-hmm. Many of the fans may have as well, and probably the people you think are going to win are probably going to win. So,
not to spoil it, but there you go. But, you know, before I get on to some things that I wanted to ask you about specifically having to do with Dynamite, I want to backtrack to the AEW interim champion, Jon Moxley, because you said something to me off the air that got my attention, and I wanted to make sure we brought it up here. You said something about him, you know, obviously he's been on a rampage, no pun intended, since having the opportunity to become the interim champion and a win at Forbidden Door over Hiroshi Tanahashi. And he's clearly a fan favorite, has been since his debut in AEW. He's back in the top mix again as the interim champion. But you said something about his work off the air that I would love for you to say here and expand on.
I said he's getting into a system. You know, let's back up even a little more. And people have said, Ric Flair is, you know, he has a set routine. He's a routine worker. Everybody becomes a routine worker to a degree. And what I mean by that is you find what works best for you, and you realize this, you know, within your physical abilities and your mental abilities and so forth, and you develop those and you use other things. But these are the things that if I watch you wrestle five times, I'm probably going to see five times. Just in different series, different, you know, you won't do them in a particular order every time, or at least the hell I hope you don't. And so I had said to Vic that John's working the system. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way at all, because we all end up limiting ourselves to what we know we do, or should limit ourselves to what we do well. That doesn't screw with your health or the person you're wrestling's health. and it get and gets over with the fan base. And now, Jimmy Cornette, who I respect like crazy about his mind and his wrestling mind, believe me, has mentioned, I've heard this secondhand, that John was the worst worker in the business or something along those lines.
Yeah, he's pretty rough on
Moxley. Yeah, and I want to say, yeah, he's in a system, and you do see that a little bit. I also want to say he'd break out of that system because if he wasn't able to be more versatile, then I would have never suggested to Dr. Tom give him a dark match, which would have never gotten him into the WWE, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which he would have never gotten to where he's at now. So believe me, he can work. Work a babyface style if he wants to. But the fans are into it, and he is sort of the, I don't know, I'm trying to think of something I could compare with ECW, Nation of the Sandman and Myrrh or something like that. I mean, he doesn't stand back there and smoke cigarettes, but, you know, he comes through the crowd with a water bottle and prance and walks around stuff. But, you know, he's into a series where he's going to exchange chops. Going to exchange this, going to exchange. Everybody does that to a degree. But realize this too. The match, you know, the matches he's having of late, there's not much in the one from last week for the one from this week or the what's going to be the one from next week or the one from 3 weeks before this. So there's not a lot of chance for you to diversify your style. It's a semi-hardcore style. It's more hardcore than it is technical wrestling. You won't mistake him for Bryan Danielson. Or if you do, we need to get you a pair of glasses. But anyway, that's what I had said. John is in a system that works for him, and it keeps him healthy. And apparently it's over. And I think, I believe in John enough to think that if he sees that, well, I've had my regular match tonight and the people kind of sat on their hands, I better change it up some. And I think most top line professionals look at things in that particular way, you know, and not just think, well, I'm over for the rest of my life. I'll just do these things until I die. That doesn't work either. But yeah, I hardly think John is the worst professional wrestler I've ever seen or have seen recently. I can think one in that same company. His name's Danhausen.
I knew that was coming.
Who makes John look like Les Thornton, for Christ's sake, or Lou Thesz, or anybody else. So, yeah. No, I'm sorry, Jim. Corny, I can't agree with you because Danhausen has made his scenes. He is far, 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 far worse than... And of course, Corny's seen some bad performers in the damn ring himself, more so than John. But John can open it up, and John can, he want to get on the mat and do some switches and takedowns, hell. And I wish he would. I would wish that they put him with, instead of the Mance, I mean, I've got nothing against Mance, I don't know Mance Warner, but instead of these guys where it's going to be kick and punch and let's exchange 4,000 chops and 50,000 punches and stuff, put him in with somebody that can go on a mat, do some, and let's see the other side of him. And a lot of times, the reason you don't see that is not necessarily the performer's call. There's a guy called the writer or the booker. Well, in AEW, there is a booker, period, from what I'm told. And if I'm wrong, then somebody needs to tell me, but that Tony Khan is the booker, period, end story. Okay, then he needs to change John. Give John some opponents that he needs to wrestle, and then you'll see a different John. And I'm not adverse to seeing a little bit different because listen, if he were working for me, if I were working for that company and I was to put his, I don't want to see him bleed every week. You wear things out when I see them all the time. And that company the business tends to be bad about that in recent years, but I think AEW is probably the poster boy for it at this current time, honestly. And I don't mean that to be derogatory towards AEW. I watch it, and we'll watch it tonight, and I see some stuff on there that I really like. And then, like every other show, I see some stuff on there I don't care to see again. So, but John Moxley is not the worst worker in the world. Jimmy knows that too. I exaggerate when, like, if I'm just about to say to you, well, let's see, AEW has switched 20 heels to baby faces to heel this last month. Wonder why? Now, they haven't done 20, but they've done 5. How's that? Which is 4 too damn many. So let's lay some of this at the feet of the company, because obviously this is what they want out of John currently. And I won't disagree with Jim. It needs to change a little bit, because John is a more versatile performer than he's given credit for.
So we also referenced we referenced the fact that the Battle of the Belt special tonight probably have some good matches, but not a ton of drama. We did get a little more drama on Dynamite, however, this past week between Christian and Jungle Boy, and even more with Cole, Fish, and O'Reilly taking out the Bucks and Adam Page making the save. I'm still holding on to my prediction from a week or two ago that when the Trios tournament begins, the team will be the Bucks and Kenny Omega. However, this definitely puts you in the mindset of the Bucks and Page teaming up, mending these fences after several years on opposite sides. But I'm interested in your thoughts on that particular angle with Cole, Fish, and O'Reilly separating themselves from the Bucks. And then I got a question for you about this past week's main event.
I'm glad they separated, because, you know, I'm a fan of Cole and Fish and O'Reilly and Roddy, and Undisputed Era. And I've said myself, if I were running a show and that Undisputed Era group were available to me, I would put them right back together and as the same group. Quite frankly, the Bucks can't hold a candle to those guys when it comes to legitimate working, serious work, and getting over. I mean, I shouldn't say they can't. I should say I've never seen them. I don't know that they can or can't, but I've never seen them work that. You know, they're more about, hey, we really don't want to be out here, but we're going to entertain you because this is really cool and we're really cool and that sort of thing. So, and I don't want to be, they're not going to be baby faces for me. They may switch for 9,881 people, but they won't switch for the old man. I'm just not a fan. And I don't know these guys, and I'm sure they're nice guys, but it's about their gimmick, their work, and so forth. But I'm glad that Undisputed, well, they're not a, what were they were the, they're, what would they call them now? They'll call them the Era or something. Anyway,
that's a good
I'm
question.
Glad they're still, they're still intact, but I don't think they need to be harnessed with the Bucks, quite frankly. I don't, and yes, Omega needs to come back as a heel with them as well, I think. Page needs to stand alone, or I don't mind him doing a little something with the Dark Order guys, although that there's a group who's been there since the beginning and it don't seem to ever die. They lose members, but they just are always there. Page, I'm a big fan, and he doesn't need the Bucks or anybody for that matter, but, you know, the boss will do what the boss does. But, we're going to have a trios title now to match the other 400 titles.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's still, well, actually, I was going to say there's plenty of belts we haven't seen yet. We actually did see those trios titles a couple of weeks ago. So I take that. That's one less set of belts that we have, in fact, seen from Tony Khan's collection. But speaking of belts that folks would like to add to their collections, Chris Jericho is going to get an opportunity to become the AEW interim champion, taking on Jon Moxley on Dynamite next week. He got that by virtue of his victory over Wheeler Yuta on this past week's edition of Dynamite. Yuta asked for Lionheart Chris Jericho before this match, which seems like a tall order when you're asking anyone to turn the clock back 25 plus years. So I'm curious to know, between Yuta asking for Lionheart and Jericho promising at the end of the show last week that Moxley would be facing Lionheart Chris Jericho, how did Jericho look to you this week?
Not the Lionheart that I first met. No. His work, you know, he's gotten in better shape. Let's face it. Let's be honest here. I am a Chris Jericho fan. I am not such a fan of him as a heel in AEW, be honest with you. But I am a Chris Jericho fan. I consider him a friend. He's impressed me over and over again over the years. But when he started with AEW, he wasn't in great shape. He's gotten in better shape. And he's also able to do some of his old moves a lot better than and he was doing them a couple of years ago when he, you know, first came on board with the company. But somebody was saying to me, well, we've seen the song and dance. We've seen him and Cassidy rolling around in what was it, kind of juice or
The mimosa was a mimosa match, right? Something like that.
The mimosa match, and then him and MJF doing a song and dance routine. So why not? No, I think, you know, Chris can be the glue to hold some of this stuff together. I don't see, I wouldn't put the belt on him right now. I would not. Not for no particular reason. It's just, I think that Moxley, you know, has a strong shelf life too. And I don't know. Where do you go? Let me ask you, if we put that belt on Chris, who's his first challenger?
God, that's a good question. Where would you go with that? Eddie Kingston, since they just had some stuff going
Lord,
on?
Lord, no, please. That's
I hear you.
You mean ECW?
Yeah. Maybe somebody else from the Combat Club. Get Danielson a couple of wins, and let's make the match.
Yeah, could be that too. And he could, you know, but yeah, I think Chris is valuable to the company. I think Chris is an important piece of the puzzle. But I don't see him as, I don't think he needs to be the champion. He's Chris Jericho. And that's, you know, done in the right way. That's actually all he should need, I think. So no, I wouldn't put the belt on him. Will they have a good match? I'm sure they will have a solid match, a good match. Will it be the Lionheart? Come on. I can't smoke that much weed. And I don't think he can either. No, no. Listen, the guy has made his bones in this business. No two ways about it. And he deserves every accolade he gets. But I just, at this point, we were talking about new faces in WWE and younger guys and this and that and the other thing. Here's, to me, if you get, let's go back to my idea of old school. You take one of your young baby faces or young heels who you see a lot of potential in and make them Jericho's tag team partner, and he is their mentor. And I see that having quite a bit of shelf life and being versatile enough that, you know, it'll last for a while. So that's what I would do, honestly. And forget the factions and the sports entertainers versus their wrestlers. Again, I think that's a weak angle to start with. And if I don't see a difference in the two styles, then what the hell are we doing? So, yeah, I think I see a lot of value in Chris Jericho. I just don't see any value in putting a strap on him. And no, he's not going to be the Chris Jericho that worked the first Pillman show in 1998. It ain't going to happen.
Well, he wasn't using the Lionheart name in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, but we will be talking about Lionheart era Chris Jericho here in just a minute or two in looking back at a historic show that is celebrating an anniversary this weekend. Before we get to that, though, let's talk about something else that has a great deal of historical value. The fact that you were behind the design and implementation of one of the very first, actually the, not one of, the very first pro wrestling t-shirt.
That's true. I did have an idea that this business needed t-shirts, and Jack and Jerry Briscoe agreed with me. So the three of us threw our money together, and there was the first t-shirt out there was a Briscoe Booster t-shirt, artwork by Jerry the King Lawler. Jack and Jerry and myself put that thing out in 1972. And you can get a replica of that from Pro Wrestling Tees. You also get an I'm a Les Thatcher Guy t-shirt if you wanted one. But yeah, the Briscoe I think it's a great collector's item. And two of my dearest friends and Jack, one of the greatest world champions of all time. So yeah, check it out at Pro Wrestling Tees.
as well as some very vintage DVDs that contain some footage that folks may not have had an opportunity to see if they weren't watching Ohio Valley Wrestling regularly or HWA.
Yes, Wrestling from the Heartland, the Lost Developmental Tapes, Volumes 1 and 2. They are over 6 hours of content on each. They're both two DVD sets with matches, interviews, extras. Joe Dombrowski and I do the voiceovers, and Joe does more of the actual play-by-play, and I do little stories behind the scenes. You can get those at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And also the Brian Pillman Show's anthology, the 20-year anniversary. It's a four DVD set, 15 hours of content, all four of the great shows from 98, 99, 2000, 2001, matches, interviews, footage of the auctions, the awards, and my God, extras on top of extras. And that one is at pillmanshows.com, or the two addresses, joe-dombrowski.com or Pro Wrestling Library. Let me say, while I'm on this pillmanshows.com thing, if you happen to go on that site, we closed the EPW, Elite Pro Wrestling Training site, down. And a lot of that content was given to Joe Dombrowski, and it is now on the www.brianpillmanshow.com site. If you go to the icon, it says About, click on it, and it'll have about the Brian Pillman Show, but it'll all say about Les Thatcher. And he's starting to put up, he's got the art covers of some of the Mid-Atlantic magazines that I've done, photographs. There's all sorts of content that will be put up later on, but that's on that the pillmanshows.com website at this particular point in time.
All right, brother. So you pointed out to me before we got started today that it was the anniversary. Well, yesterday was actually the anniversary of a historic Smoky Mountain Wrestling show. Of course, you know, we just talked about those DVDs with not just the Pillman shows, but talking about in general about HWA and OVW, developmental territories for both WWE and for a time HWA was part of WCW as well, all designed and patterned around those territories that both you and Jim Cornette excelled in for so many years. And Smoky Mountain Wrestling was much the same. And, of course, no coincidence that Jim Cornette was the owner, operator, and head booker of said promotion. And you were a part of it as well, my friend, especially at this Night of Legends that so many people in the Tri-Cities still talk about.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that is 28 years ago. My God. Masa Hori. Japanese guy, such a sweetheart of a guy, posted a bunch of that stuff this morning on Facebook and reminded me a bunch of that too. And I'll mention more about Masa here in a minute. Excuse me. But yeah, that show was put together 28 years ago. And it was so much fun to do. Jim and I did a lot of video work to it. Put on the Smoky Mountain shows leading up to Night of Legends to promote the Night of Legends. And a lot of that is historical, and that is all, if you happen to buy the DVD, that's all on the DVD as well. And I went out to Chihuahua Park, the outdoor amphitheater, where a lot of our wrestling history was made in Knoxville, and we did a promo there. Put up pictures of Whitey and just so many things, historical things, to promote for the Night of Legends. And it turned into one hell of a show, too. It really did. And I'm sure everybody that listened to us has heard about Jericho breaking his arm trying to get something done. He was out practicing by himself early in the afternoon. And took a bad bump, and man, I'll never forget, we were cutting promos in the back, and so whoever it was came running and said, Jericho, that's, and then Jimmy said, Jesus Christ, you're interrupted. Jericho's broken his arm. Then Jimmy said a lot more than Jesus Christ. He did, for sure. Whoa, because this is one of the big matches on the damn show, right? The Thrill Seekers. Our dear friend Lance Storm and Chris were the Thrill Seekers. They were just coming into, they had their first bookings in the United States.
and we were hot on them, and they were like flyers over and above anything that this part of the country had seen up to that point in time. But he went ahead, and they had one hell of a match with that broken arm. God knows how. And when we mentioned Chris Jericho earlier, listen, when he's got my vote. When I saw that, I thought, Jesus, man, talk about the show must go on. You've made a point of that. But, you know, we had Road Warrior Hawk was here. We had the Funks. We had, my God. The Knoxville Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame that night with inductions, that's all that video is on the package of the Night of Legends. What you won't hear, well, I don't know, you mentioned it to me too. That was the first show I ever worked with Jim Ross. And I've told this story before, but it's a funny story. In fact, I posted something about it on Twitter this morning when Tommy Noe and Massa had put up pieces about, Night of Legends. And that was, like I say, it was the first time Ross and I had ever worked together. So at the intermission, we're in the back getting a drink. And Terry Funk comes up and he said, I've been watching the show on the monitor back here. He said, you and Jim are calling wrestling matches the way they should be called. He said, how long have you guys worked together? I looked at my watch and said, about 2 hours. He said, oh, bullshit. I said, no, man, that's all we had worked together, with Jim. I tried to be an analyst more when I wasn't doing play-by-play, and Jim bought me as that, and I feel good that he looked at it as that way, because that's a great compliment. But yeah, that was the first night we'd worked together, and we did the opening of the show and the whole nine yards. And that's still available out there. But there is also a copy where Corny and Dave Meltzer, and they weren't mad at each other then.
That's right.
But they took us off, damn you. Anyway, you can still get that. It's still out there for sale. And if you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor and look at the historical pieces that Corny and I did for the lead up. Those are all on there, the Hall of Fame inductions, and everything should be on that Night of Legends package. And as we mentioned, 28 years ago yesterday, that all came about at the old Knoxville Civic Coliseum.
Well, we could spend an hour just talking about the lives and careers of the guys in the tag match between Bob Orton Jr. and Dick Slater against Ron Garvin and the Mongolian Stomper. But never mind having the opportunity to talk a little bit about the Rock and Roll Express, the Thrill Seekers, as you mentioned, Chris Jericho and Lance Storm over the Heavenly Bodies of Jimmy Del Rey and Dr. Tom Pritchard. That you referenced the Funks and Terry being there, Road Warrior Hawk being in for that show. They were, of course, part of the main event. It was Bob Armstrong, Hawk and Tracy Smothers over Bruiser Bedlam, Dory, and Terry Funk with Jim Cornette in their corner in a match I'm not sure we have seen very many times since. Can you explain to the people what a Coward Waves the Flag match is?
Yes, that's the way the match ends, is that if you're beating this guy to the point where I want to live and I can't get back, I can't make a comeback for anything in the world, they have to wave the flag and then the match is over.
So the person getting beat isn't the one who's actually, it's somebody in the corner, somebody involved in the match that's on their team has to actually wave the white flag, literally?
Oh, well, if the guy being beat can raise his arm and wave the flag, yes, he can wave it as well. But that crowd was alive that night. God, we had a meet and greet beforehand, and Massa put some pictures on Twitter and Facebook this morning, both from that, pictures of he and I, pictures of Terry, he and Terry Funk, I forget who all the pictures, but Peggy Latham, who was honored at the gathering this week in Charlotte. That's where we used to do the Mid-Atlantic Fan Fest. This is now called the Gathering. And Peggy was awarded posthumously, obviously, a plaque. Peggy passed away last year. And Massa reminded me that we had wrestled. It was fan week in Smoky Mountain that week. Fan week. I mean, they softball game, matches, meet and greets. It's, you know, you come and you stay a few days. Anyway, we had a show in Johnson City, I guess on Saturday night. And so I'm getting ready to leave. And I forget who it was that Peggy and Massa had ridden to Johnson City with. But anyway, whoever it was, they took off without them. And somebody cornered me and said, hey, these people need a ride back to Knoxville. Can you take them? I said, sure. So Peggy and Massa and I had a chance to chat for 100-plus miles from John City back to Knoxville, and he's never forgotten. And I enjoyed it, too. He's there as a wrestling fan. I believe, understand, he lives in Japan. He is a Japanese man and lives in Japan who comes to this country for shows like that. And he's a super fan, just a super good gentleman and a class guy. And I consider him a dear friend. I do. He's just a wonderful guy. And he said, I miss your microphone. I said, well, you're the only one, kid. But yeah, it was fan week, you know. And so they rode back with me. And like I say, Peggy passed away. I guess it's been maybe a little over a year ago now. And she was awarded this weekend at the gathering in Charlotte. So our remembrances of Peggy, and a shout out to my friend Massa, who put us all over on Twitter and Facebook this morning. So thanks.
A wonderful way to end this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. Yeah, if you have the opportunity to go back and check out Night of Legends, it's out there. It's available to you. So do so. It's actually quite fun. A lot of names that you may not have, that you may have heard of, but have never seen before, give you an opportunity to see them in front of a sold out building and an absolute spectacle, as it always was. Plus, you know, if you get the right version, you get Jim Ross and Les Thatcher together on commentary.
Or if you don't get the right version, you get that goofy Jim Cornette and what's his name? Dave. Oh, damn, I can't remember. Oh, Meltzer. I remember.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm teasing, boss.
So with that, we're going to bring this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly to a close. For the legend Les Thatcher, my name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to spend it here with us. Stay cool if you're in one of the many places throughout the United States of America that is experiencing ungodly warm temperatures for the past couple of weeks. And we will talk to you again next week.